It's been a while since we did Parsha. Okay, so we are finally going to talk about ovens, what you've all been waiting for. And the question of ovens involves two sugyos, one which we'll do tonight, and one which we will, Be'ezras Hashem, do next Monday night. The two issues are Recha and Zeya. Recha means smell or the aroma, and the question is, can the aroma of, let's say, non-kosher food transfer to kosher food, or milchiks to fleishiks? So for example, if you're cooking something kosher and non-kosher in the same oven, would the reach of the non-kosher food somehow affect the kosher food? And the second question is that of Zeya. Zeya is steam. If the non-kosher food releases steam, will that affect the kosher food? So they're both issues, and we're going to deal with them separately. For example, the issue of recha is only relevant if you're cooking in the two items at the same time. If you're cooking the kosher, you're baking the kosher and the non-kosher food in the oven at the same time, and they're open, so then there was a potential concern that the reach from the non-kosher food will somehow affect the kosher food. Assuming you're doing it b'zeh achar zeh, there's no possible concern for recha, because we don't assume that the reach lingers in the oven and can somehow affect the thing that's cooked subsequently. When it comes to zeya, even though the zeya will not linger either, it's relevant even b'zachar zeh, because if we assume that the zeya was absorbed into the walls of the oven, then subsequently when you cook something the next time, that might have an effect. But as I said, zeya we're going to do next week b'ezras Hashem. This week we're only doing recha. So what is the halacha of recha? So there are actually two sources in the Gemara that discuss this question of reach. The first is a Gemara in Psachim, and the Gemara discusses what's the halacha if you roasted kosher meat and non-kosher meat in the oven at the same time. There's a dispute. Rav says it's aser, and Levi says it's mutter. Rav says it's aser because the reach goes from the non-kosher to the kosher food. And Levi says it's mutter. Why? His lashon is recha lav milsahi. Reach is unimportant. It's lav milsahi. Now let's try to understand this for a moment. Let's first think of Rav's view. If we're talking about a case where the reach did not actually affect the taste, so then presumably everybody would agree that it's mutter. The question is where the reach actually affected the taste. Sometimes you can have, we talk about a smoky flavor, right? A couple weeks ago, something sold in our oven, and so it got very smoky. So all the food that was cooked in the oven tasted smoky. There was challah being warmed up in the oven, it was before Shabbos, and you could taste, the challah tastes smoky. In other words, reach can sometimes, at least, affect the taste of something. There was no physical contact between the foods, but the smell of the smoke in that case had an effect. So Rav says, if the non-kosher food affects the taste of the kosher food, then it's aser. And yet, Levi says it's mutter. Why would Levi say it's mutter? I taste, let's just imagine an extreme case, in the same oven, I'm roasting ham and challah. And my challah now has a taste of ham. I could mamish taste it. Still, Levi says it's mutter. How could it be mutter? I taste the ham. Don't we have a principle of tam kicker? What's tam kicker mean? Tam kicker means any time the non-kosher food imparts taste to the kosher food, that the kosher food is unkosher. So here, I could taste the ham. Why would it be mutter? So presumably the answer is that when the Torah was mechadesh, this idea of tam ke'ikar, that was only stated in a case where the tam was transferred through negiyah, through the two food items touching each other. For example, what is the source of tam ke'ikar? We discussed one possible source is the Torah's obligation of koshering food. In that case, where you put the kosher food on a non-kosher plate, the tam is transferred through negiah. Another source that Gemara says is mishras, where it's in the parsha of Nazir, where grapes or tam of grapes seep into some other food. It's transfer of tam through negiah. So maybe the only time the Torah ever said that there's an issue of tam kicker is when there's transfer of taste through touching. In this case, that isn't the case. And therefore, Levi says it's mutter. There is another Gemara in Avodah Zarah that also discusses the topic of reach. There, the Gemara originally discusses an interesting type of case where you somehow smell wine with a straw, and this is wine that's usser. And here, too, there's a debate. What's the halacha? Abaye says it's usser. Rava says it's mutter. Abaye says it's aser, because reicha milsahi, reach is halachically significant. Rava says it's mutter, reicha lav milsahi. So we have two places where this topic is debated. What's the halacha? So Rashi says that these two sugyos are actually talking about the same thing. It's a little bit strange, because some of the rayos that are brought in one source are not brought in the other source, in the reverse, but some are the same. Rashi thinks fundamentally this is the same machlokas. And since we have a principle that the halacha is like Rava against Abaye, so therefore we should paskin recha lav milsehi. And therefore Rashi thinks we are matir, it's mutter. This is also the view of the Rif. Tosfos has a whole complicated equation, and he tries to argue that these two sugyos are different and shows why they're different, in which case it's possible that we follow the stringent view and we hold at least some of the time Recha's Milsehi. So how do we paskin halacha l'maisa? Do we paskin like Rashi, or do we paskin like the Rif? So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, which is your first source on the page. Now, there's only one source that I gave you. It's a Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Kuf Ches Sif Aleph. I admittedly did some revisions on the Shulchan Aruch, which is probably inappropriate. But the reason is because there's this very long Ramah who keeps on popping back and forth, and so I restructured it. Hopefully in doing so, I didn't make any mistakes. But should you decide to look this up, the words are all from the original. I just changed the order. Okay, so let's see. How do we paskin? Says the Shulchan Aruch, Ein tzolin basar k'shein basar nevela. You shall not roast kosher meat with non-kosher meat together. O shall behema temeya, or non-kosher meat either because it's not slaughtered properly or it's a non-kosher animal like pig. B'tanur achad, in one oven. V'afal pish enogin zebezeh, even though they don't touch each other. So far, what do you think he paskin like? Recha milsahi or lav milsahi? Recha milsahi. Except we have to read the next line. V'im tzalan hareze mutter. But if you did it, it's mutter b'dieven. V'afilu haisa isura shemena, harbe v'amutaris raza. Still, it's always asr l'chatchil and mutter b'dieven. So which one did he paskin like? Did he paskin recha milsa or lav milsa? Depends. L'chatchila milsa, b'dieven lav milsa. Where did he come up with this idea? So this comes from the Rif. Even though I told you the Rif thinks we paskin like the opinion of recha milsa, however, in the end of that Gemara, there's an indication that we are sometimes machmir. We'll talk about why this is in a moment, but the Gemara, according to the Rif, actually, even the opinion that says Recha Lav Milsahi, even Levi thinks it's mutter b'dievet. Levi says, if you went ahead and you roasted the kosher and non-kosher meat together, then it's mutter b'dievet. But l'chatchila, you should not do so. So that's the halacha. The halacha is l'chatchila. For our purposes, it's much more likely to be discussing the milchiks and fleishiks than kosher and non-kosher. We usually don't cook non-kosher foods in our oven, but let's say milchiks and fleishiks. L'chatchila, you shouldn't cook milchiks and fleishiks together at the same time in the same oven. But b'dieved, if you did, the food is mutter, at least with respect to the question of recha. What about the question of zeya? That's for next week. So that's the halacha that the Shulchan Aruch says. Okay, so let's read on in the Shulchan Aruch. Haga, the Rama says, V'uadin l'basrim chalav na'midin hachi. Like we said, this question applies equally to kosher and non-kosher as well as basrim b'chalav. That l'chatchila no, b'diavet yes. Now, does it make any difference the size of the oven? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, b'matan or gadol shemachzik yud beis esronim. If the oven is so large that it holds yud beis esronim, and isaron is more familiar to you for because that's the shear of challah, also the amount of mun that fell. So if it holds yud beis esronim, there's a debate whether that means the entire contents of the oven or it means the floor of the oven. Upiv pasuach, and moreover, it's open, meaning to say the oven is vented. Mutter litzloso bo, uvilvad shelo yiguza bezeh. The Mechaber writes that if the oven is a very large oven and it's a vented oven, so then even l'chatchila it's mutter. What would the reason for that be? What do you think? Right, in other words, the reich dissipates and there's no possibility of it affecting the taste of the other food because of that dissipation. Haga, the Rama writes, v'nogin l'chachmir l'chatchila filu b'tan or gadol. We'll discuss the details of this in a moment, but the Rama says l'chatchila were machmir. Are our ovens big? It's not so clear. So you're very interesting that you're asking that question because you live in the Heights. Your oven has a fan? Yeah. So most of the ovens in the Heights don't have fans. Our ovens don't. My oven, meaning my house, is not. But it is still vented, meaning to say that you'll notice a lot of times on the top of the stove, you'll see, right, those are the vents of the oven. That's why if you actually do burn something in the oven, you'll notice smoke coming out of that. So our ovens are all, I'm sorry, or if you leave, right?
I put dough on the thing.
Right. So that is the vent of the oven. So are our ovens big? So Moshe actually did some research on this last time. He did the mathematical work, and he measured. Your oven is 24 by 19 by 17, if you're interested. Which, l'chora, if it's less than 7 by 7 by 7 tfachim, it should be okay, about 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. It's an interesting question, not clear whether our ovens are big or small, but I think generally we would be machmir l'chatchil. It's also unclear whether the ventilation in our ovens is sufficient to be considered pasuach. Meaning to say, there is an escape, but you wouldn't really call it open. And therefore, even Sfardim would be machmir l'chatchila, and as we noted, Ashkenazim would certainly be machmir l'chatchila in our ovens. Okay. Yes? A fan would make it worse. Correct. If you were using a convection oven, so presumably that could make matters worse. And that's one of the reasons why it causes things to cook much quicker, right? Okay. Now, let's continue reading in the Shulchan Aruch. Yesh omrin, de'ein matirin recha filu b'di'eved, ela imken hatanur pasuach k'tsas min hatzad, o lamala b'makom sha'ashan yotzei. So this Yesh Omrim says that let's say it's a totally unventilated oven. So then maybe we're machmir even b'diavad. This emerges primarily from Tosfos. Tosfos, as I said, resolves the two sugyos by saying they're talking about two different types of things. And one of the conclusions that emerges is that in at least a small unventilated oven and perhaps any unventilated oven, even b'di'evet it would be aser. So toasters might be unventilated. I don't know if there are vents in the toasters. In our toaster, it's small, and In ours, when things burn in the toaster, you see the smoke sort of coming out through the glass doors, but I don't know if that would be a vent. Some toaster ovens are vented, so possibly that's correct. An example of a small unventilated oven might be a toaster. And in that case, the Rama writes that there are those that are machmir even bidiyaved. And he writes, how should we paskin? Uvimakum hefseid ein lahachmir bidiyaved afilu sasum lagamre. So in that case, if it's a makom hefseid, then you could be makel, and that would be the view of the Mechaber as well. But shelo b'makom hefseid, then b'dieved you should be machmir. So if you cooked something milchiks and fleishiks together at the same time in your toaster oven, so then we would say that if we're not dealing with a loss, significant loss, so then better to throw it out or give it to somebody who isn't Jewish. Whereas if you're talking about your larger oven, then b'dieved it would be okay. Now, what about if it's covered? So continue in the Shulchan Aruch. No, it's in Rama. V'im echad mehem mechusa b'ka'ara o b'batzek o kiyote bo. If one of the two things, let's imagine we're talking about milchiks and fleishiks together, are covered. So you're cooking milchiks, you want to cook milchiks and fleishiks together in your oven at the same time, but you're happy to cover one of them, either with a pot cover or aluminum foil, or even batzek, which is dough. You use dough as a covering. Then mutter litzlosam afilu taner katan upiv sasum. Then you can roast them together, even l'chatchila, in a small oven. What's the reason for that? Right, no smoke. Right, we're talking about. It happens to probably be true about steam as well, but that's for next week. So covering it solves the problem because the reyach will remain inside what you do. Now, I'll give you an interesting halachic question. Last week, somebody asked me this question. I'm not going to answer it till we get till the end, but just to think about it. So he said they were cooking milchiks in their oven, open, plus carrot muffins closed. In other words, they put aluminum foil on it. However, they noticed when they took it out that the aluminum foil had opened. So while they thought they were closed and covered, it turns out they were actually open. So he wanted to know, could they serve that carrot, those carrot muffins at a fleishig meal on Shabbos? Originally, their plan was fine because it was going to be closed. But it turned out, instead of being closed, sometimes you know this happens with aluminum foil. You think that it's closed, but it opens up. So would we say, it's an interesting question, that that's l'chatchila or b'dieved? Because you could eat them. They're kosher. In other words, if it was treif in the oven, then you could eat those carrot muffins. But maybe, so we'll say, okay, no, the carrot muffins are milchik. So who says you have to eat your carrot muffins with your fleishik meal? But of course, that's why you bake them. You want to eat them with your fleishik meal. So we'll return to that question at the end. Okay, so, but to address this question, actually, we could turn to it now in a moment. So here we talk about what's considered l'chatchila. So continuing in the Shulchan Aruch. Vim afa pas im basar. Let's say you baked bread with meat. Asur l'ochlo im chalav. You may not eat that bread with chalav. Im yesh lo pas acher. If you have other bread. So this is actually more common than you think for the following reason. Oftentimes when we bake bread, let's say we're making challah, we usually don't have other things in the oven at the same time. But a common thing to do is to reheat the challah in the oven with everything else. We do this all the time. On Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos starts, we throw everything into the oven. So there's chicken in the oven and there's challah in the oven to warm up. So then, basically, and they're open sometimes. Sometimes you could cover them, but let's assume everything is open. So the challah is open, the chicken is open. So basically, I've now baked challah together with meat. Okay, not a big deal. You eat challah at a fleishik's meal. Well, let's say I warmed my challah with my chicken, and then I have a half a loaf left over, and Motzei Shabbos I want to have a malafa malka, and I want to have my challah with cream cheese. Can I do that? So, says the Ramah, if you did it, so you shouldn't, im yesh lo pas acher, assuming I have other bread. Okay, I might prefer to eat my challah with Ermelav Malka, but I could take out another piece of bread and have that with cream cheese. So then, since I have other bread, I shouldn't. If I didn't have other bread, sounds like it's mutter. V'chein, im ove kochavim afa pas im iser. Likewise, if a non-Jew baked bread with other food together in the oven, that's aser. Aser liknos oso pas im yesh lo pas acher. You may not buy that bread from the non-Jew, assuming that you have the ability to buy other bread. D'chol zeh mikri l'chatchila. This is l'chatchila. Why is it l'chatchila? Because there's an alternative. Aval im ein lo pas acher b'revach. Let's say you don't have alternative available bread. Let's say, for example, the only bakery in the town is owned by a non-Jew, and he bakes the bread. The bread is presumed kosher. Might be paspalter, but it's presumed kosher. After all, what kind of ingredients are put in bread that aren't kosher? Whether that applies nowadays or not, we could talk about another time, but the assumption in most of times of the Rishonim was that the bread baked by non-Jews was generally kosher. So, but the problem is, he uses the same oven to simultaneously bake non-kosher things. So, assuming he's the only baker in town, then that's okay. That's b'diavad. Likewise, if you baked your bread with meat, and now you have no other bread available, you can't just open up the freezer and take out another loaf of bread. This is all the bread you have. So then the Ramah says, Mutter b'shneihem, d'zeh mikri l'inyan zeh b'diavad. In other words, b'diavad doesn't mean that you have nothing else to eat and you'll be starving. No, b'diavad means ein lo pas acher b'revach.
So if I just am in the mood of eating this bread with cheese and I don't have any other bread,
it would seem that according to the Ramah, it's okay. We're going to read in a moment that the Gra disagrees with that. Now, before getting to the Gra, though, I want to try to understand this idea a little better. We said before that the Rif thinks that b'diavad recha lav milsehi, but l'chatchila recha milsehi. So what's the basis for this? So the Rif gives two explanations. One explanation is that even Levi, who permits it, only permits it b'diavad, but not l'chatchila. And the second explanation is that it's davar sheyesh lo matirin. What does that mean? There's a principle in Bittul that states that if something is going to be permitted anyway, shortly, without relying on Bittul, then you may not rely on Bittul. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have something that was an egg that's laid on Yantif. So that egg is muksa. Now let's say that egg got mixed in with other eggs or other food or the like in a way that it really should be bato. However, we would say over there that davar sheyesh lo matirin, since if I just wait till after Yantif is over, it's going to be mutter even without bittul, because this isn't a permanent iser, this is just an iser for the duration of Yantif. So then, since it's davar sheyesh lo matirin, it's going to be mutter anyway, don't rely on bittul. There are two ways to understand this. One very fascinating lamdish away by the Ran, the simple explanation though is that of Rashi, and that is, achshav shetochlanu b'iser tochlanu b'heter, since you could eat this without relying on bittul, so why should you rely on bittul? Tochlenu beheter. Now, parenthetically, that tells you something interesting about the nature of bittul, that that's considered iser. If you would have asked me, I would have said, if bittul works, it works. It's not iser anymore. Seemingly, we don't say that. And therefore, any time we don't have to rely on bittul, we shouldn't. So the Rif says, that's the reason for this halacha. Let's say, again, the case is where I went ahead and I baked my bread together with meat. So now, if I baked my bread together with treif, so it's mutter, because I have to rely on bittul. If I don't rely on bittul, it's going to be aser. But when I baked the bread with meat, So it's davar sheyesh lo matirin, because I could consume this bread in a way that doesn't rely on bittul, namely eating the bread with pariv or with fleishiks. So why should I rely on bittul when I could consume this bread beheter without relying on bittul? So therefore this bread is fundamentally what we would call davar sheyesh lo matirin. Now parenthetically, that tells you something interesting. What it tells you is that the reason why we hold recha lav milzehi is because bittul. We assume that there is something problematic transferred in the smell, via the smell, it's just batal. Apparently it's batal even if it's discernible, which is fascinating. So the basis of the heter of recha is because of bittul. And therefore, since you don't have to rely on bittul, why? Because tochlenu beheter, don't eat this bread with milchiks, just wait till... just eat it with fleishiks, so you shouldn't rely on bittul. Those are the two svaros of the Rif. So which one do we paskin like? Do we paskin like his first reason, or do we paskin like the second reason? So, l'chora, I think we paskin, what would you think?
Oh, I had a question before.
So let's just answer the question. So l'chora, we paskin like the first reason, because if we held like the second reason, so why would we be mako if it's hard to find parev bread? That was exactly your point. Good. Baruch shekivanta, shivant, you were mechavin to the gra. That presumably we follow the first reason, and therefore, if you can't find parev bread, all you have available is fleishik bread, even though it is davar sheyesh lo matirin still, you're allowed to be lenient. And likewise, when the Rama says, im ein pas acher berevach mutar b'shneim, that sounds like the first reason of the Rif. So that's l'chora how we paskin. However, the Gra says that the Rama went too far in his leniency. Remember, the Rama said that ein lo pas acher berevach, then it's mutar. So to take your very question, you went ahead, you warmed up your challah with your chicken on Erev Shabbos. Now it's Motzei Shabbos, you want to have a melava malka, your challah with cream cheese. Problem is, you don't have any other bread. So the Rama sounded like that would be mutter. Ein lo pas acher berevach. The problem is that that's going too far, because who says you have to put cream cheese on your bread with your melava malka? So put peanut butter on, or jelly, or parv margarine, or whatever. You don't need to have cream cheese. So the Gra says that I fundamentally agree with the psak that it's only aser l'chatchila and it's mutter b'dievet. But I don't think ein lo pas acher b'revach constitutes sufficient grounds to say this is b'dievet, because you could just have the bread with parv food. So they both fundamentally agree. Just the question is, what warrants relying on this leniency? Okay. Yeah. You think you should eat them together? It wouldn't make you fleishiks, presumably. It's going to be less severe than parah food cooked in a fleishik pot. Right? So if you ate this bread, you wouldn't become fleishik. So if you wanted to have your malava malka, you could first have your bread with peanut butter and then have a cup of coffee and ice cream for dessert. That would be fine. But you shouldn't put the cream cheese on the bread. You should eat them together at the same time. Yeah. Ah, that's another interesting question, which is, maybe you should say that the bread becomes treif, because now it's fleishig bread. Right? The answer is presumably not, because since it's mutter b'dievet anyway, let's say you put cream cheese on this bread, it would be mutter. So it's not going to be fleishig bread in the sense of being aser. Yeah?
So, in general,
correct. So, the term b'dievet sometimes has slightly different connotations. The technical and correct meaning of the word is, like you said, after the fact. B'diavad, it's already done, so now it's mutter. Correct. So if you went ahead and you took the bread that was warmed with the chicken and you put cream cheese on it, you don't have to throw it out. That's b'diavad. over here, the Rama says that it's even more lenient than that. So the word bidyabed here doesn't have its usual connotation. And sometimes you'll see in different cases we say different things. Shas hadchak is kibiyavidami, what about hefsid, what about tzorach, and the like. Okay. So let's go through some of the practical halachos and cases where it might be aser bidyavid according to some shitos. So like we said, if you had a small oven that's entirely closed, so the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, was matir bidyaved, aser l'chatchila, and the Rama said this is aser bidyaved except if it's a hefsid meruba. If it's a small oven but it's vented, it's open, so then the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama would both say it's aser l'chatchila matir bidyaved. If you had a big oven, but that was entirely sasum, in other words, it was non-vented, so again, the Shulchan Aruch would say aser l'chatchila mutter b'diavet. According to the Rama, it's not clear, but the Prima Gadim thinks that once it's not vented, it doesn't really matter how big or small it is, because since there's nowhere for the reach to escape, we would aser it b'diavet, except if it was a hafsid meruba. What if it's a taner gadol and pasuach legamrei? So then the mechaber is matir lechatchila, and within the view of the Rama, it's not clear, but the Shach thinks the Rama is matir lechatchila here as well. What if it's taner gadol upasuach ktsas? So the Shach thinks that according to the Rama, bedas haShulchan Aruch, it's aser lechatchila and mutter b'diavad, and that's what the Rama himself holds. And finally, there's a case where we're more machmir and possibly aser bidyavid. We'll talk about this next time, I suppose. But if you had iser v'heter that were baked together in close proximity under another pot, so that might cause the reyach to transfer more. We'll turn to that next time. Under a single pot on top of it. So it serves, it sort of makes it into a small oven. Under certain circumstances, we're more machmir for charif here, but I think we've had enough of charif, so we're not going to talk about it. Now, there's one very important thing to discuss, then we'll go through a bunch of halach lemaisa cases, and hopefully wrap it up with enough time to do parsha. The Gemara in Psachim says that even Rav, who says Recha Milsahi, agrees that if it's in shtei kederos, if it's in two pots, it's mutter. The Gemara also says that if they're not in pots, but they're being roasted, but they're roasted in a way that it's like they're munachos b'shtei kederos, it's mutter. Now, what does it mean they're roasted in a way that it's like they're in two pots? So the way Rashi understands that is that it means that there's a hefsek between them. There's some type of mechitza, like a mechitza of coals. So let's say you add two things in an oven, one kosher, one non-kosher, right? Kosher food, non-kosher food. They're baked together in the same oven, roasted together in the same oven. So according to the opinion that Recha Milsahi, then the kosher food would become unkosher. We would say, l'chatchila, you shouldn't do this. What about if there's a mechitza in between them? They're both in the same oven, but there's some type of a pile of coals in between them. So according to Rashi, everybody would agree that's okay. That is the way Rashi understood the sugya. According to the way the Rashba learned the sugya, the heter is not because of a mechitza, but bishul is more lenient. The heter for pots is not because the pots themselves serve as a mechitza, but because when you're dealing with foods that are cooked, as opposed to foods that are roasted, there is less reach. If you go ahead and somebody makes a barbecue, so the whole neighborhood could smell it from blocks away, if you cook something in a pot. So you could smell it in the kitchen, you know, maybe in a room adjacent to the kitchen, but even if the windows are open, even if you were cooking outside, you wouldn't smell that from a block away. Cooking produces less smell than reyach, than roasting. By the way, since we want to do Parsha today, how does that relate to Parsha Seshavua? Right, how so? Good, good.
No.
So say, think about it. Why do you have to roast it? Okay, so the halachas, you have to roast it. According to this Rashba, what's the reason why you had to roast it? Ah, exactly. In other words, all the halachos of Karban Pesach were all about publicizing our willingness to slaughter the God of the Egyptians and showing our bitachon in Hashem, the lo yiskalunu. So that's why they took it through the street and they put the blood on the floor and the like. Why in the world was the Torah so makbid about roasting? According to this Rashba, the answer is very simple. Because everybody could smell it. You couldn't hide it. It was a barbecue. Yeah.
Then why wouldn't that be part of the things that got cut out with the roast?
Some of them remained. There's another aspect of roasting that might be derecheres as well, but some of those halachos remained ledoros. Not all of them, but some of them, including this. Anyway, something to think about. Back to the halacha. So, good hara. So, according to... Now, the Beis Yosef doesn't understand the Rashba, because he's medayik from the Gemara that really it should be talui in a hefsek mechitza, and not... because of this distinction. Lemaisa, it's a machlokas ha-poskim. The Shach says we follow the view of Rashi, and therefore as long as there's a hefsek mechitza, it's mutter, and the Magen Avram seems to accept the view of the Rashba. Now, this is very, very important. Why? The Rashba says that the only time we're going to be makel is a mechitza itself isn't sufficient. It has to be cooking as opposed to roasting. You could cook in the oven, for example, it's a liquid, right? Pot roast is cooking that's done in the oven because it's full of liquid. But the difference is between cooking and roasting versus hefsek kedera and not hefsek kedera. Okay, correct. Zeya will be a much bigger problem with cooking. As I said, tonight we're only talking about recha. Yes. I believe so. As long as they cover the food. As long as they're above the thing. If we follow Rashi. According to...
If it's uncovered.
So now we could go back to that really interesting question that the fellow asked me. He said, what happened? I went ahead and I cooked my chicken together with my... or is milchiks, but let's take the challah case we talked about before. You're warming together your chicken with your challah. So the first question to ask is, are they both uncovered? If one of them was covered, either your chicken was covered or your challah was covered, your challah would remain parath. Okay, but let's say they were both uncovered. But let's say your chicken was in a pan. Let's say they're next to each other on the same rack in the oven, but the chicken is in a pan, and the mechitzos of the pan rise above the chicken, right? Sometimes you might have, it's like a big chicken where, like a turkey, where it's in a pan, but the turkey or the chicken goes above the top, so that, then there's no mechitzos. But let's say it's just quarters of chicken in a pan. So the walls of the pan are taller than the chicken, and they're next to each other in the oven. According to the Shach / Rashi, then your challah is still parav. According to the Magen Avram / Rashba, we're talking about baking, not cooking here. The bread, there's no liquid, so then it's going to be aser. This is very important to know. Do we paskin like the Shach, Lekula, or the Magen Avram, Lechumra? The Prima Gadim sounds like we paskin like the Shach. The Chachmas Adam brings two deos and says you could be Mekel, B'makom Hefsin Meruba. There are many achronim that are make like the Shach. I thought, therefore, in this case that he asked me, there would be room for leniency based off of the Shach. But this fellow decided to ask Rav Shechter, after having spoken to me, always a good idea, and Rav Shechter didn't really explain himself, but it sounded like to me that he was choshish for the Magen Avram, and therefore thought that these carrot muffins shouldn't be served with the fleishig meal. Now, you could have it as a first course. You could have the carrot muffins with fish, but you shouldn't actually have those carrot muffins with the challah. Now, there are a number of other, couple of more questions we have to deal with, but yes?
Just in this case, what's the difference between cooking and roasting?
Cooking and roasting, cooking means with a liquid, roasting is dry roasting. The reason why the Rashba thought there's a difference is because when you're talking about roasting, the reyach is more intense than when you're talking about cooking. If there's no liquid, then they're the same, according to the Rashba. According to Rashi, it has nothing to do with roasting versus cooking. The question is there a mechitza between...
So Rashi says if there's liquid, then it's fine.
Then that, right.
So if it was chicken with liquid?
If it's chicken with liquid. Now what about if it's liquid on the bottom, but it's open on top? I don't know how you deal with that. You could argue that that would be roasting as well, because the top is roasted.
Well, but there are muffins in
liquid. No. Well, you're saying they start off as liquid. Well, soup or like pot roast would be an example. Let's say you did pot roast with your challah.
So batter is not liquid.
We're going to talk about whether batter is liquid. That's really more relevant for next week. Sauce covering the chicken would definitely be liquid. That would be cooking for the Rashba. So if you had that, if you had cooking plus walls, then both opinions would say it's mutter, right? If we're cooking pot roast in an open pan and warming your challah at the same time, then both, according to Rashba and according to Rashi, the challah would still be considered parv. What about Zaya? So you're saying if there's a liquid, anyway, it's going to be Zaya. Correct. You are correct. You're correct that the challah in that case would become fleishiks because of not the zeh and the reich. No, but this is very relevant because Lamaisa, in his case, or in the case of the chicken and the challah, where the chicken is dry, there's going to be no zeya, if you assume like Rav Moshe. We'll talk about that next week. But there will be recha. But there won't be recha if you learn like Rashi because it's surrounded by the walls of the pot. Okay. An interesting question that comes up here is burning challah. We usually don't have the issue of recha because l'chatchila we're not going to ever cook milchiks and fleishiks at the same time. We're always going to say that they should be cooked at different times, certainly if they're open. And therefore, and we don't usually bake have usher things cooking in their oven at the same time. But what about challah? Why? Because challah is really usher. And a lot of times you want to burn the challah. So you put the challah in the oven to burn at the same time as you're baking the challah to eat. The challah to burn is actual challah. The challah to eat is bread. But the problem is that essentially you're cooking, you're baking in the oven at the same time, isser and heter at the same time. Should that be okay? So the Shach writes that b'iser v'heter kasav d'chala shalanu shehimid rabbanan mutar l'chatchila la'afos im hapas mashma d'iser d'oraisa kachosh. Fine. He says like this, our chala, our means in chutzlaretz, so the halal, the Shach writes that our chala, meaning chalas chutzlaret, in Eretz Yisrael, the halachos might be different, but in when it comes to chalas chutzlaret, which is only an iser derabanan, so then, since it's also kachosh, it's mutter l'chatchila. So according to the Shach, if you want to bake your chala, or burn your bake your bread at the same time as you burn your chala, it is okay.
Uncovered.
Okay. However, the Prima Gadim writes that perhaps l'chatchila you should cover it. So that's what you do. Now I'll just warn you, there's a problem with sometimes covering your challah. This question I've seen been asked twice, which is people went ahead and they wanted to be machmir for the Prima Gadim. So therefore they wrapped up their challah in a ball of aluminum foil. And then the ball of aluminum foil exploded. Because, now, it doesn't usually happen. It really is going to depend on whether there's a little leeway in your thing. But let's say you wrapped it very tight. We all know that when things bake and heat, it expands. So in this case, again, I don't think this happens most of the time, but in two cases that I'm aware of, now this creates quite a shiloh, because now all of their challahs have little pieces of iser all over their challah. The simple solution is to give it to my kids, because really, ketanim that are kohanim could eat challahs chutzlaretz. We're machmir not to. So, but anyway, what kind of tarovis is? Is it min b'mino? What's a shir bittel? Very interesting shaila. Not for now, but the only advice I'm giving you is that if you do decide to follow this primogadim and be machmir l'chatchila to cover your challah, you're taking a risk because it might explode. Now, because of that concern, if you look at the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa in Chelek Beis, Perek Mem Beis, Ha'aranun Beis, he writes, therefore, instead of burning challah and getting into these problems either of recha or explosions, just wrap it up in a bag and throw it out. Now, this is a little strange because you're not being mekayim the mitzvah sreifas challah. So he says, well, you know, it's going to go to the incinerator and it's going to be burned there. I don't know. I don't think most of our garbage is incinerated any longer. So this is not such a pashat kula. The Minchas Yitzchak Chelek Dalet Siman Yud Gimel is bothered by this problem as well. He thinks that there's a mitzvah sreifas challah and you shouldn't give up on it. So, I'm sorry? Wait till what? Oh, you mean do it separately? You could if you want to, but you don't want to bother with that. So again, you know, I think that really Mikra Din, it's mutter to do it uncovered if you're concerned. If you want to be mekayem mitzvah sreifas challah, then, and you're worried about explosion, but I think most of the time if you wrap it well, it doesn't explode. None of you have ever heard of this exploding challah shaila, right? Only me. Yes.
Here, I just thought of a point. Why don't you put it in your sandwich maker or a toaster?
No, don't put it in the sandwich maker.
Not just because it's crazy.
No, then it bleeds.
It'll be a much bigger issue. Because, is it count as usher? Meaning, like, if you...
It is usher.
Yeah.
So you'd have bleos of usher.
Yeah, would it create your...
It would trafe up your toaster oven. Not your toaster oven. Your sandwich maker would trace it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because it's touching it.
Right.
The toaster oven would be fine.
Why?
Because
it's
recha... Yeah, but you're not doing it together with heter.
So?
So what could possibly go wrong?
Usher?
Yeah. But you're saying there's zeya? No zeya.
The tray.
Don't... You put it on aluminum foil. In balua yotze below rotev. I don't know why you object to the toaster oven thing. There's nothing else cooking at the same time. We only are worried about recha when the two things, the iser and heter, are being cooked at the same time.
Iser in your pot, even if the bottom's covered, don't the walls get...
A covered pot? Then you have zeya problems.
So it's a toaster oven.
There's no zeya problems. Bread doesn't... Well, we'll talk about that next week. But if you're makel for zeya for solids...
Walls don't absorb
recha. That's the pashup shot. There's a chinuch beis Yehuda. All right. There is an opinion that's concerned with recha and kalim. It's not off the wall what you're saying. There's... So there's an opinion... my parsha hopes are going down the tubes as we speak. There is an opinion... There's a machlokas haposkim, whether... There's an issue with kalim for reach, meaning to say, let's say, is it a problem to cook open meat and open par food in the same oven? So I don't care about the par food becoming fleishiks, right? But what about the par of pan? Does that become fleishiks? In other words, how does reach affect kalim? This is an interesting machlokas achronim. Some are machmir, some are meko. However, I think that you could be mitzdaref Rashi Shita with the lenient opinions on this shaila. In other words, you don't have to be chosh for the Magen Avraham, which means that assuming that your fleishik is covered by the walls of the pan, then your other parv pan will remain parv. Right? Okay, yeah. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch writes, you remembered. You would not cook your...
With the pot.
Yeah, yeah.
With my other stuff is because it would burn, and then it would make everything taste burn.
Okay.
Isn't that reasonable?
Yeah.
So if, like, I literally...
But the reason why... You're right. It would be recha, but we're meikel for chalas chutz la'aretz about the shayla of recha. You're fundamentally right. But because of the iser is an iser kal, we're meikel. Okay, now... So let's say you went ahead and we'll leave that. Cooking things next to each other. The Shulchan Aruch writes that it's okay to cook open pots next to each other in the oven. You don't have to worry about recha in that case because of the walls. Now what about the concern of splattering, where this also applies on the stovetop? Cooking milchiks and fleishiks at the same time on the stovetop. Shulchan Aruch sounds like he's not concerned. The Ramah and the Darkei Moshe writes, in the name of the Isser V'Heter, Af kishatana regula o al gabi kira asr levashal beis kedera zu betzadzu dechashinan lenitzotzos shenitzu mizu lezu amnam b'dievet ein lachosh. According to the Isser V'Heter, we're concerned with splattering, basically. Uve Mordechai, kas de aser litzlos beish fudim, echad shal nevela ve echad shal shchuta, kedamina bekat ketzet zolin, zei tzel zem, yishem taru veskufin, aval akamani yisbara dim, af beis kedero zu, eitzel zu, af lechatchila enu el chumra be'alma. So according to the Isser V'Heter, chayshinan litnitzotzos, according to the Mordechai, it sounds like it's okay. I think there's a raya that it should be mutter, because the whole Gemara's discussion about recha only seemed to be concerned with recha, not with nitzotzos. Without that, the Gemara says, for example, you could cook two psachim, two carbon pesachs, next to each other. There seems to be no concern with nitzotzos. The Shach, however, writes, l'chatchila, we are chayshinan l'nitzotzos. The Taz says we're not. Practically speaking, whether you think we pass on like the Shach or the Taz, it is something to be aware of, especially if you're frying. We all know that if you're frying, things do splatter. So it would be a very bad idea to, let's say, fry schnitzel, even and have a empty milchik pot on the stove at the same time, because there might be little splatters of oil or the like that goes from one to the other. And if that did happen, you would have to kosher it. So, generally speaking, chum einav berosho, and it's a good idea to keep them, especially when you're dealing with the types of foods that tend to splatter, like fried foods, to keep them far apart, and keep that in mind. Okay, so that is the end of Recha, and that, Ravos Machshavos Pelevish, that was actually going to be my topic, about how, like, we plan things and it doesn't work. So we are Yotze, our Parsha B'di'eved, with our discussion of the Karban Pesach. However, if anybody wants to read an unbelievable Drashos Haran on this week's Parsha that answers so many questions, among them the purpose of the deceptions, the various deceptions in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and what it means that Bnei Yisrael believed in Moshe only after Kriyas Yamsuf, and why it is that there's so many things in this world that we don't understand, and all your other unanswered questions that you may have ever wondered, you should look at the source sheets and read this Drasha Saran from the 11th Drasha, and you'll be blown away. And Be'ezras Hashem, if you're not blown too far, come back next week, and we'll finish the shiur when we talk about the halachos of Zeah.